Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Divine all blessed. It is on the days when Ogun is angered, there is always disaster in the world. The world is full of dead people going to heaven. The eyelashes are full of water, tears stream down the face. A bludgeoning by Ogun causes a man's downfall. I see and hear, I fear and respect my Orisha Ogu. I have seen your bloody merriment. Ogu is a stickler for justice. Children of Ogu feel the need for justice and find it very difficult to ignore injustice. He is truth. In Yoruba land, Ogun symbol iron is used voluntarily in courts of law for the taking of oaths by witness to affirm that the truth will be told, like we do here with the Bible. No one who believes in Orisha would dare lie after swearing to tell the truth on Ogun. When Ifa speaks of truth, it does not mean some idealistic version of the way things should be. Ogun searches for the truth about the way things really exist in the world. Ogun nurtures and protects the oppressed. Ogun is an outcast and protects society's outcast. He makes sure that wealth is shared. He is looked to as a protector who will promptly respond to the appeals of the oppressed in their encounter with an unjust fate. He is looked to for protection within society from injustice and without from outside enemies. However, Ogun's hot temper makes him a dreadful figure. While he protects the innocent, the poor, victims of military attacks, he inflicts pain on others, the deceitful, the liars, the rich who dare not share, the one enemy in warfare. Ogun is a solitary figure who lives alone in the forest, we say. Ogun's undergarments are red, signifying his ferocious nature, we say. But on top of this, he wears mariwo, the palm fronds. Palm fronds have supernatural connotations and soften Ogun's image. They symbolize cool, restrained behavior. I pay homage to Ogun Lakaye, a divinity worthy of worship. Ogun, who had two very sharp cutlasses, sharp as fire. He used one for clearing an area for making a farm in the forest. The other he used to cut a path through the forest from one place to another. The type of clothing that Ogun wore on the day he made his descent from the hill to the plain, I know very well. He wore a flame red coverlet over a blood red tunic. Mariwo, Yeye, Ogun, Oso, Alakadeo. Swirling palm fronds are Ogun's garments. The honored one has arrived. You are now listening live to and always in archive at your leisure and convenience to the Divine Prince, Pan-African spiritualist, practitioner, author, and advisor, Alagun Oloye, Hudu Obeya Bokur, sharing with you in all things spiritual, mystical, metaphysical, cosmic, evolutionary, revolutionary, universal, healing, and holistic from a Pan-African hoodoo world spiritualist perspective. All is indeed a blessing. You can just see beyond the veil, for it is all just an illusion and a test, one of the greatest divine mysteries of this life cycle. This is my constant prayer, my mantra, affirmation, reverberation, reiteration, and my ever-living reality. And it is crucial to the very foundation of my understanding, my teaching, my walk, my work along this divine, all-blessed life path and journey. It is how I, the Divine Prince, make sense out of all that we are challenged with here in our daily existence on Mother, Father, Earth. And it is my personal place of power and understanding. That place from where I begin, the place from where I realize and crystallize all my endeavors, understanding that I and I alone create and co-create my divine destiny, and I alone create and co-create my divine, all-blessed reality. And so it is. Ashe, Asheo, Elasti, Asheo, Ashe. Today is Tuesday, August 1st, 2017, and I am emanating and vibrating with you and for you, live, virtually, verbally, cosmically, quantum, universally from this working temple of the house of the divine prince. High potions, Hoodoo Central, Black Hawk Voodoo in this legendary, historic, beautiful, and most enchanted city in America, New Orleans, Louisiana, the land of my ancestors and those who came before me along this spiritualist Hoodoo Obeah life path and journey, passing down that great Obeah stick along with the knowledge of the healing, life-giving herbs, roots, plants, rituals, spirits, and minerals. Remembering that spiritual knowledge and power lie in its efficacy, ability to produce and manifest powerful, reliable, tangible, lasting manifestation and results right here and right now in this divine moment in time space. All else is vanity, all else is ego, all else is just an illusion. I'm always humbled and honored, appreciative by those of you who do join me here at high noon U.S. Central Standard Time for the Power Lunch, Hoodoo New Orleans Hoodoo Secrets and Recipes here on Blog Talk Radio. My live listen-in and call-in number is area code 347-215-8967. Press the number 1 on your telephone keypad so you are ready with your question, comment, and request. I will open your mic and invite you into the discussion. My direct URL is www.blogtalkradio.com, divine-friend. And be mindful, we do not do live personal readings here on the show. You will need to send me a formal written email request to divine-friend@houseofthedivineprince.com. My website is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, operating in 360 degrees of well-documented revelation and manifestation is www.houseofthedivineprince.com. Eshu Olegwana Kosi Wary Awo Ulo Soli Ivo Ada Afanbo Osi Obatalami Itani Ivo Omiyo Abanishu. Eshu is a respected elder who flogs, confronts, and uncovers fools that one verse in mysteries uses truth to own you. He causes scatter to Obatala, shakes rascals to have sacrifice. The owner of warnings is the one who is Eshu, Aboru, Aboye, Abushishe, Ashe, may our Ebo be accepted, may our Ebo come to pass. May that which we pray for, ask for, make sacrifice for, be manifest in our daily waking reality. We say, Asheyo, Ashe. You know, there's also an element of competition in the word Ogun. In nature, there is competition for the availability of resources. We compete with the birds and the insects for our kumquat and our peppers and the fruitful things that grow on our plants and our vines. So to become full in the survival process, vitality and assertiveness are required. If we take that idea and see how it relates to the concept of medicine, we get some greater sense of the origin of this word, Ogun, and its metaphysical principle. We have in the metaphysical concept of Ogun the idea of survival through assertive and aggressive action that is directed towards maintaining survival. To put that into a contemporary language, modern context, we're talking about testosterone. That and other things, of course. We have what I would call the dynamic, assertive, aggressive, expansive quality in nature, which is expressed by the spirit of Ogun. We often attribute that to being a masculine thing, but both men and women have testosterone. Both men and women have estrogen. Both men and women have hormones, chemicals that play very distinctly and specifically in our physical development as well as our spiritual and emotional development. This particular idea predates by many years the association of Vogue Goon with just technology and the molding of iron. Think about Ogun, we think about blacksmiths and toolmakers. This is limiting because it suggests that some person figured out how to make use of iron technology, and now we are deifying that process. If we do this, we are missing the earlier manifestation of Ogun as a force in nature. On the last show, we talked about Ogun as a force of nature, as a presence in the earth, even before man, as we know it, discovered iron smelting technology. So I call Ogun the spirit of iron, but even this translation is limited because Ogun is the spirit who is honored by the toolmakers and not the methodology of toolmaking itself. The historical genesis of the human relationship to Ogun may be emerged out of the tradition of men being hunters and women being timekeepers. This is a separation of gender that was probably established for practical reasons. Women form their monthly cycle, leave a scent that is easily picked up by animals. At the same time, the cycle becomes a built-in biological clock, if you will, synchronizing the woman with the spirit of water, the movement of our oceans. And of course, scientifically, we know that the movement of our oceans is guided, pulled and pushed also by the movement of the moon. These two social functions become separated by gender as a matter of practical convenience. Is that there is no indication in this that men are somehow better than women, that physicality is somehow superior to emotionalism or spirituality. There is simply an indication of physical resources making certain tasks easier to accomplish. So a woman hunting game meat while on her menstruation would be a practical inconvenience. We get a clue about the genesis of the understanding of Ogun by looking at the survival of the symbolism of Ogun. In Ogun's high cauldron with three legs, wrapped with a chain and spikes inside, if properly made, there's usually a knife and maybe some tools in the pot. So we look at that and we think, what does it represent? What does it mean? With the pot, we have the symbolism of the womb. We also have the symbolism of the earth. And we have the idea of three legs. Three is symbolic number of Mother Earth. Three is a symbolic number of Mother Earth. Ifa says that whenever two priests meet, two owls meet, three is always present. The third being Earth herself. And if I can digress real quickly, because in saying that, I heard that biblical scripture reverberate back in my mind about where two or more are gathered in my name, I will be in the midst of them. And it's another representation of that triangle, that pyramid, that three-pointed geometrical form that we call a triangle. It represents earth and the spirit coming together. Whether you call heaven or the sky god male or female, it's representative of that higher great manifestation that we call God or the greatest creator spirit in the universe. It then represents the physicality from which we are birthed from, have our existence in, and live upon. But then that third element, bringing those forces together. And in Yoruba mythology, we see that three as representing the presence of the earth always being there, always being available in our prayer, in our efforts, at the crossroads, in our rituals, at every stage of our physical existence. So we look at that and we think, what do these things, these symbols represent? We have the symbolism of the womb. We have a symbolism of the mother earth and the connection to the mother and the earth. Grief symbolizes the relationship to earth itself. This gives us the symbol of the womb supported by the symbol of the earth. We've got the chain, which we have already spoken about in a previous show, its connection to Ogun, but also about the symbolism of that link between heaven and earth. It was also said that the Orisha, Obatala, Oshimare, many other spirits traversed between heaven and earth by way of this chain, if you will. At times, there is a piece of red cloth around the pot. In addition, we have the iron spike. There are some scientific indication that the rust on the iron deposits at the bottom of the ocean created bacteria, which became the source of the first single cell life forms on Earth. This would be the beginning of evolution. It may not have been iron that caused this phenomenon, but it was some type of mineral that is now symbolized by the iron spike. And some of my crystal healers who are listening have seen that also in the presence of hematite. Hematite is an iron ore mineral. It shows up often in its polished form with that metallic mirrored-like shiny surface. But if you scrape that hematite across your sidewalk, your rough sidewalk, or porcelain plate, you should get a red dust trail. And that is the presence of that iron ore material within it. It is said that our blood and the smell that we get from blood and from the menstrual blood is directly linked to a smell of iron and iron ore materials. In the pot, we have the symbol of sperm in the womb. Now, the interesting thing is that the female component of Ogun is diminished here in the West. You don't often hear talk about Ogun having feminine, female-like symbolism or mythology at all here in the West, particularly by those experiencing that Orisha romance who have not initiated, studied with anyone, truly been offered entryway into the mystery of these traditions. What we use to consecrate an Ogun pot is Eros Sun. The Eros Sun is a red powder from the tamwood tree. In Yoruba, the word Eros Sun, we often attach Eros Sun to the number 4 in a shell divination, in a cowrie shell divination. Eros Sun meaning menstrual blood, we can directly retranslate from Yoruba Eros Sun to mean menstrual blood. And if you are putting red tamwood powder on the Ogun pot, you are talking about the primal, pre-creative drive for survival. And here in New Orleans, in some of our houses, when you mark that doorway, we mark that doorway with red brick dust. So I'm revealing another New Orleans voodoo secret, and there's a blood symbolism there. Just like the Bible, days of Moses, and the plague is coming, and if you mark your door with the blood of the Lamb, the spirit of death will pass over you, and your firstborn son will not perish. And so this voodoo ritual belief has been with us time immemorial. Time immemorial. Historically, this urge led to the development of hunting and to the development of time making. Again, we associate hunting with sort of the masculine energy and time marking or time making with the feminine energy or the feminine aspect. Once upon a time, before our cemeteries were placed on lockdown here locally, you had tourists and the like marking tombs, marking time. The value of marking time was the ability to anticipate the shift in the seasons, to develop adequate protection for winter, and eventually led to the ability to plant crops. We are talking about primal motivational forces and the development of human consciousness. So when we mark time, if you will, in terms of making a prayer, placating spirit, praying to God for something, something with an eventual earthly physical manifestation, and we mark that in time. In the creation myth, Ogun's initial effort is saved through the efforts of Olumilu. I believe that this is a historical memory of the fact that unchecked, procreative, aggressive behavior is not the optimal principle for social organization. We have the idea of ethical judgment, tempering the pure, unbridled, aggressive nature of Ogun as a spiritual source. Ogun is handled in a very fearful, aggressive demonstration when we see Ogun manifest in both Yoruba, many other West African traditions, but even here in the Americas as well as Haitian. What I want to stress as someone who is a son of Ogun is the story about Orumila's relationship with Ogun does not mean that Ogun is evil or uncontrollable. It doesn't make Ogun bad. It doesn't make Ogun the devil. It doesn't make Ogun the uncontrollable wild man or the blood-sucking warrior. It does make Ogun part of a bigger picture in which the issue of balance becomes important. The control of volatile substances. We even take care in how we house and store our bleach, especially if you have children and pets in the house, how we house and store batteries, how we handle gas, whether it's in your stove or in your gas fireplace or in your gas canister in association with your barbecue. There's always that aggressive element to fire, and Ogun is often symbolized actively by the presence of fire. When we make and birth Ogun, Ogun and iron is birthed through fire. So we show respect to the elements that we fear and that we know must be handled with care, lest they escape from our control. So every aspect of the way in order to fully understand the totality of this force, Ogun, what it is and how it manifests in our life. So where's Ogun's power, or Ashe as we call it, its energy? And how do we express it fully in our demonstration, in our daily lives, in our activity? One of the ways in which Europe community is to allow the elders of Ogun to make offerings. In many Yoruba communities, there is room for specialization. You can have a ceremony for Oya when it comes time to make an offering of a goat. A priest of Ogun can be called in to make the cut. After that, he might leave the ceremony. The priests of Ogun are often initiated with the knife. And so when we think of and speak to ritual ceremonies, it is often the Ogun priests who are called in to make the cut, to make the sacrifice. Those who are most qualified handling this power, this force. To make this clear, we are speaking about what is commonly called animal sacrifice. The word sacrifice is a Christian term. The word in Yoruba is Ebo. Sacrifice does not translate to Ebo. We do not sacrifice animals. That suggests that we kill them and toss them. Be real clear that the concept of Ebo is to provide a chief for the family, for the community, the house. When you live in an environment that depends on domesticated animals for food, the slaughtering of an animal is always a sacred act, just as is honey always a sacred act. And here in the West, particularly in the UK and here in America, we've been disconnected with how we produce our food, how we produce our animals, where your milk and your ice cream and your other food and dairy products really come from. And so the sacredness of that act has been removed and replaced with machinery and computers that do the specialization and a very inorganic, industrialized system that is now in between us and the ritual act of partaking nourishment, partaking of the resources that we gather, Mother Earth, Mother, Father Earth. And it's interesting to me, again, my Christian past life enters my mind, and I think about some of you who still pray over your food, who still have that mindset. Yet, the whole entire middle passage of where your food was birthed, where it came from, and how it got to your table is often taken out of that equation. Some would even say they pray over their food to protect, you know, from the presence of the contaminant, you know, or the ill will that could be latent in the food through an industrialized system. So in traditional Yoruba communities, as well as Akan, Fon, Iwe, my regular listeners know that I often teach from Yoruba because it's the most prolific material that you can go back and research and do your homework and get validation about what I say and teach here on the show. The Ogun initiates slaughter domestic animals in Yoruba tradition and hunt those wild animals that are part of their diet. They sometimes specialize, so not everyone necessarily does both. But both of those responsibilities are associated with the same energy, the same ashe or power of Ogun. When you go through a rite of passage for a personal transformation, it is the Fa or the Ifa belief that the more people that pray on your behalf, the more likely it will be that your prayers will be heard. Say that you decide to give up drug addiction. If you whisper to your brother late at night that you're going to give it up, and that's the only person you told, you could get away with slipping flying as long as you stayed away from your brother. But if you got on top of the highest point in your city, you stood in front of City Hall in New Orleans with a bullhorn and said, "Now hear this, I have given up drug addiction. This will put more pressure on you to live up to that commitment." So the idea of initiating in isolation, self-initiation, makes it easy for you to make pact and oath and commitments that nobody can validate, that nobody is privy to, that nobody is a witness to, that nobody can say, "Yeah, I was there, I heard him say. Yeah, I was there, I saw her do." In order to get a lot of people to know that and know what you're up to, you feed them. So on the day that you announce that you've made the commitment to move from being a child to an adult, uninitiated to the initiated, from addiction to sobriety, if you will, you have an announcement, you have a ceremony, you feed the community. After the feast, no one in the community will allow you to escape your commitment. Traditionally, it should be so. You should be held accountable, accountability to what we say, what we pronounce, what we verbally commit to in these ritual ceremony. So the idea of escaping the presence of other eyes, other witnesses, is really at the root of why this there's this move, this trend right now for self-initiating, slick, sometimes outright wicked behavior in terms of initiation, moving from house to house, godparent to godparent, babalawo to Ianifa to Mambo to Hogan, and it's always the same story, I was initiated by somebody who's now dead. We had problems. We had drama. So now I need you to sort of fix what I ain't got or what ain't there. And often it's an attempt to evade commitment, evade that call to responsibility for commitment to these traditions. Having other folks be a part of your journey also says that you have a support group, people who you can pull together with in your time of need or your time of ignorance or your lack of information. You have people who you can go to who can express their experience, their training, and pass that then on to you. So we slaughter a goat to announce to the community that this is the day that I commit to a particular type of transformation. We offer the hymns for the community. Our God don't need our physical stuff. Oludamari, Mawalisa doesn't need our material implements. So another common phraseology you'll hear is this resistance against the donation, against the cost, against the fee. See, they want the power, the energy, the ashe. But they want the babalawos, the ianifas, the priests, the priestess, the practitioners to starve in the process. They don't want to be concerned about how you eat, how you live, the state of your health, the state of your well-being. And this, again, indeed, is a Western demographic, a Western mindset that comes from not only our experience with Western religion and tradition, because many of you will immediately revert back to the negative. What went wrong? What wasn't provided for me? Who wasn't available to me? But there's always, as I've stated in many other shows, and I don't have time to digress right now, there's always two sides to that. There's also the seeker who comes incorrectly, integrity, who's looking for the shortcut. So there's always a multi-dimensional perspective to all truth, to all reality. So we are providing a feast in a ceremonial way. So why would you provide a feast in a ceremonial way? Related to the idea of reincarnation, when a priest of Ogun cuts off the head of the goat, he proceeds that gesture by saying, may the spirit of the goat reincarnate as a goat to feed future generations. You're making an acknowledgement of the interconnected relationship between all things in nature. We believe that everyone, animals, trees, humans, rocks, come to earth with a destiny that was agreed to before we come to earth. So it is our belief that a goat comes to earth with a destiny to provide food for the feast that marks a particular rite of passage. For this reason, we want to thank the goat. We want to thank the plant. We want to be thankful to the earth. Even in Native American culture and other indigenous cultures, we hear about the harvesting of food, fruit, produce, herbs, nuts, meat from nature, and always giving back and receiving in a place of gratitude to celebrate the rite of passage for all life. We speak to animals to put ourselves in the scheme of things. We are reminded to not be selfish in our ritual. It's not all about just you. It's also about the others participating, the others present, the others extended out into the community and onward. It is us in relationship to the forces of nature, not us against or enough or us superior to. There is something at work here that's being made sacred in a special way. It is not about the blood. The blood is the seal to that covenant. But there is a mistaken notion in the U.S. particularly that the more blood you use, the more power. And that's incorrect. In Africa, they put the blood into the earth, or they might put it in a bowl. When the bowl is placed in the earth, it has regenerative value, like fertilizer. Then they take a feather and dip the feather into the blood and touch the blood to that which they are feeding. Now, there are variations to this, of course, but the point is the notion that is common in this country, that if you sacrifice one goat, then two is better. One chicken, then two is better. And that misses the point altogether. The issue is feeding the community. The act of making a covenant with the deity only requires a small amount. It is the sincerity of the ritual act that carries the power and not the quantity of blood. Sometimes blood is used as a form of medicine. Sometimes blood is placed on the body for medicinal purposes. There's another aspect of offering an animal based on the belief in reincarnation. Animals pass into the realm of the ancestors. We pray directly to the animals so that our prayers may be taken by the animals to Orun, the Yoruba word for heaven. We believe that everything in the world has consciousness and that spirit can communicate with all things. We also have the idea of psychometry. If I touch your shoes, I can tell where you have been during the day. When we pick up the dust from the earth, the footprint left from our family member, you saw that in Ruth. We are ritually holding on through psychometry to their energy and sort of performing a rite that ensures their return to us. Your prayers against the head of the animal transfers that message to the spirit. So when you make the offering, you are dealing with the power of what we talked about during our Aja broadcast, Ajala. This is the Yoruba word for warrior, Ajala, A-J-E, but A-J-A-L-A, Ajala. We have Ogun in his warrior manifestation, which I haven't quite got into detail yet. The hunters in traditional Yoruba culture are also warriors. And we in the West associate Ogun with warrior and warriorism first. These warriors are called Ajala, which literally translates as dog of white cloth. The dog in Ifa is a messenger to spirits like the Nimbus in the Egyptian culture or the Kemetic culture. It is not a derogatory reference. When you say that you are a dog of white light, you are saying that you are a messenger of ethical conduct. In the act of making Ebo, you become Ajala. You become the vehicle in which ethical conduct is incarnated. White cloth is a reference to white light, which is the principle that is at the foundation of the idea that everything is connected. Once you experience light in its primal manifestation, you have a mystical experience that allows you to feel your connection with all things. Some people say they experience this first connection with this primal white light during meditation, or during the infilling of the spirit, or during other spiritual phenomena. Those who have experienced this state of being tend to behave differently after the experience. It is no longer just a noble idea. It becomes a source of inspiration for the root of your